The break is over. We are back. College Golf Talk has returned. Steve Burkowski, Brentley Romine with you. And while our paths have crossed on many occasions the last 3.5 months, my friend, we are reconnecting once again. I've lost track. Maybe year number 5, somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 episodes. I'm just spitballing here, but we've been doing this for quite some time. And I actually had somebody on Instagram when I was putting up some posts heading to Cyprus, like, do you guys still do the pod anymore? I hope so. I love it. So, but, you know,
seasonal podcast.
Correct. a faithful bunch, though, and we always appreciate people for listening. College golf season underway. We're going to get into your rankings in just a little bit. We're both out in Monterey, California. Cypress Point Walker Cup gets going on Saturday. We're taping this on a Thursday evening. We'll get it out on Friday to sort of set the stage. But as you and I were just talking about, time flies, and we're back at it once again.
Yeah, we were getting a little sentimental off camera before hitting the record button, and time does fly. It flies way too fast, and but you know what? Time slows down here on the Monterey Peninsula when you're at Cypress Point, and was lucky enough to get out there today, walk with some of the teams, and a little birdie told me, you know, you flew in today, and a little birdie told me that you had quite the comfy ride on the airplane, sitting up in maybe 1A, 1B.
2C, Charlie, I believe, was the proper seat, and, you know, I know
good who for you.
Out. Hey, fly as long as I have, you're entitled to those nice upgrades when they come your way.
I was going to say, with the summer that you've had, back-to-back-to-back. Yeah, I mean, you have more back-to-backs than, like, the NBA. I mean, it's impressive.
It's busy. It's been fun.
How many hours of TV?
I think after this week, we're looking at 7 USGA championships in a 10-week span. And I ballparked it somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 to 65 hours of television without a single commercial. So as we get scolded, all of us on this side of it, too many commercials. Well, we have none. Yes, we have little interstitials or maybe a 70-second little feature, not a single commercial. So I love it. More golf.
If people only knew the amount of preparation that you do for each and every one of those, it's pretty remarkable.
Well, I appreciate it.
Not to butter you up too much in the first episode.
I'm here. You've already got me. But no, thank you. Well, you and I and all our colleagues take a lot of pride. We can't wait for Saturday morning, 3 hours. Saturday and Sunday morning on Peacock for foursomes. 3 hours in the afternoon for singles on Saturday and Sunday. Shape it up to be a good one. The 50th playing of the Walker Cup. But before we get to that, I know you talking about putting in time prep, your yearly previews of what you expect to see in college golf. And we've already had a little sprinkle, a couple of tournaments right down the road, Carmel Cup. But why don't you jump right into it? You know, maybe some highlights from 30,000 feet of what stood out to you with the women, teams to beat, maybe some newcomers that you think might have an immediate impact.
Well, I'm gonna get your thoughts too, but I'm gonna rattle through my women's top 10 preseason rankings, and I just want you to initially tell me what stands out, what's surprising, and then I'll explain to you why I did what I did.
All right. Well, I'm scrolling through it. Yep, Stanford number one, no surprise. We've got Texas year two. Let's see what Laura Iannello can do because the talent's there, and we know the quality of a coach she is, a national championship winner at Arizona a few years back. Oregon, Ciara Romero, I believe the best player. Obviously, the rankings say she's the top, but we've been bullish on her for quite some time. No surprises there. USC at 4, Arizona State 5. Yeah, I guess the first thing that jumps out to me to see Duke back in a preseason conversation, You know, you win seven national championships if you're Dan Brooks, the head coach. It's been a lean couple of years. And let's be honest, the freshmen coming in will be the difference if they're playing in the semifinals at La Costa in May, or maybe don't even make it to Sunday. Now we're 9 months away. A lot can happen. Rianne Malixie is as impressive as a girls' junior golfer I've seen. I hope the back is good. I believe it's good. You know, we saw her had a withdrawal from Augusta National Women's Amateur, but she was a co-medalist at Bandon for the Women's Amateur.
I was going to say, she looked pretty good at Bandon, at least for 36 holes.
But there was a 3 to 4 month stretch she wasn't playing golf.
No.
So, you know, when you're that young, you hope it's just a one-time flare-up. So that jumps out to me. Texas A&M, you know, much improved, and we saw that with a big victory down the road last week. So those are a couple of things that jump off the page. You've got Florida in at 10. It's probably the lowest we've seen South Carolina in quite some time. You've got them at preseason 11. Just sort of scrolling down to just get a touch of everything. Florida State was obviously going to plummet in a preseason ranking when your two best players, 1 and 2 in the world, leave to go early. Lottie Wode and Mirabel Tang. That's just quick thoughts of what I'm like. Okay, teams we don't necessarily see in those spots.
Yeah, well, obviously number one was a no-brainer, right? I mean, Stanford, when I did this ranking, their average world amateur golf rank for the starting five was 7.2, which
is the lowest ever.
7.2, the average of their top five players in the world amateur golf ranking. It's the lowest that I've ever seen a team coming into the year. And when Maya Ortegren is winning a LET event and she's technically maybe your number four, that's an embarrassment of riches. And I think it's all credit to the job that Ann Walker has done year after year. She'd have, what, 6 national championships if we did 72 hole stroke play?
Yeah, she would
something like that. 6 of 10, at least 5 of 10.
Yeah, I believe there's 3 they haven't paid off on the back end after stroke play. But the numbers don't lie. And the great part, in early September, we'll sit here and say they're going to be impossible to beat. And just a percentage play, someone will beat them, whether it's next month or in the spring or in May, which keeps us all on our toes and loving it. But to your point, the Cardinal may be as good as they've ever been, at least on paper, and the numbers are pretty impressive.
But keep an eye on this Texas team. Farrah O'Keefe has been ultra consistent. She hasn't won a ton. You know, I don't know why that is. It's obviously she's done it during the summer more. She's won a women's Western. You know, she's won some events during the summer. She hasn't won a ton in college yet. Lauren Kim is a great number two, but keep an eye on Cindy Hsu. She had a nice little run at the women's amateur. She hasn't won a whole lot in college, but I think the sum of the parts, getting Vivian Liu, a transfer from Washington, who was kind of one of the biggest transfers of this past summer. Laura's got herself a really deep team, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if they're the ones that end up knocking off Stanford. But to kind of circle back around, you know, Duke and Texas A&M are kind of the two teams that really jumped up from last year's ranking. I mean, Duke is coming off a season in which they missed advancing to the NCAA championship for the second time in 4 years, but they're coming off their worst ACC championship finish ever. That was 10th. And their worst NCAA regional finish ever, which was 11th. So does adding Avery McCreary and Rianne Malixie, does that make them the 6th best team in the country? I mean, we've seen it before that some of these impact freshmen, you can make up a lot of ground and a lot of strokes with a player like Rianne at the top of your lineup. So I'm bullish on them. A&M looked really good at the Carmel Cup at Pebble Beach, winning by 20+. A lot of young players, Scarlett Schremer, Natalie Yen, a really great recruiting class. So we'll see if Garrett Chadwell can, you know, avoid the humps and bumps of a young team and, you know, get them humming at the right time.
And of course, over the next 6, 8, 10 weeks as we do this in the fall, we're going to get deeper and deeper into it. This is just kind of to wet the whistle, if you will, on the women's side. And looking,
we got to have something to talk about next week.
Correct. And then on the men's side, you've got Texas 1. I'm not going to lie. We've been busy. Yeah. This is my first time looking at it, so it's kind of bear with me.
Controversial.
I would have thought Oklahoma. I would have thought number 2 would be 1, the defending champs from a year ago. You've got Auburn 3, Florida 4, maybe a little higher than I thought. Certainly very good. I think was going the right way at the end of the spring. You've got some talented freshmen coming in. You've got a transfer in Noah Kent, so maybe a skosh higher than what I thought. I'm realizing you're not going to overlook Oklahoma anymore. Virginia's right there. I'm intrigued with the Rebs. Ole Miss, semifinalists last year. Quick glance at the lineup, very heavy in terms of juniors and seniors. Would never say it was a one-off. I'm intrigued to see, can they back it up? And then LSU, you've got it 8, a great regular season, and then they laid an egg in regionals. So those are the two that kind of jump out to me. You got Vandy at 10. They had a nice win at the Carmel Cup as well. Just a quick perusal. Arizona State, probably the lowest you've had them in quite some time, at number 12. Just peeking, you've got the Tar Heels at 18, but that's sort of kind of year two of they're not number 1 or 2. And then I could go on and on. BYU, you've got them at 20, and early rumblings, not only from us, but a lot of others. This literally could be the best team they've had in decades.
Yeah, and it could be even better if Cooper Jones was coming back from his mission this year. He's going to be another year away. He obviously made match play at the U.S. Amateur at Cherry Hills in 2023. But Kihei Akina, the incoming freshman, he just won the Utah State Open. The kid is legit. He's my preseason favorite to win the Phil Mickelson Award as the top freshman in the country. It just hits it. Like, you can tell. Like, if you line guys up on the range, you can tell which one is Kihei Akina because he looks like he should be on tour already. Kind of going back off of your comments, LSU, like, this is a big year. I think year one, even though it didn't end how they wanted to, I think Jake Amos in his first year as head coach, they probably exceeded expectations. He's taken over a roster that had gotten to the NCAA championship that previous season, but it was almost kind of a fluke. You didn't know what to expect. He brought a couple guys over with him from ETSU. Arnie Svensson has become a top 10 amateur in the world, like we predicted a year and a half ago. I think I tapped him maybe this preseason episode last year and said, watch out for this guy. He's going to be one of the best players in the country. That's come to fruition. Florida, you mentioned them maybe a little bit high. I'm kind of with you. They might be a little bit high because they don't really have a clear-cut number one guy, right? Luke Poulter is a very good player. Jack Turner is a very good player. But do they have a Michael Asasso or a Preston Stout or a Jackson Koivin? I don't know. So that's a question that the Gators are going to have to answer. And we've seen it before. You have 8, 9, 10 players who could contribute for you, and you have a super deep team, you can only play 5 and count 4. So sometimes that ends up backfiring a little bit, but I know JC and Dudley are going to at least attempt to push the right buttons. Ole Miss, the question mark is at the back end of the lineup. Is it going to be Collins Trolio? Is it going to be a Jacob Blanton or one of the incoming freshmen they have? Again, the top 4 is really good. I'm not sold on, can they get a 5th score to take some pressure off Michael Asasso? And then the question that everyone's been asking me, why Texas over Oklahoma State? I realize national championships aren't won on paper. Not only is it extremely hard to repeat as a national champion, but I don't know. I feel like Texas with Christian Moss, Tommy Morrison, Daniel Bennett. Those are three of the top, 11 or 12 players in the world amateur golf ranking. Luke Potter is your number four, former top-ranked junior who showed some glimpses in the spring. You know, so when he wasn't heckling Rory McIlroy, he actually, was starting to turn things around. And I felt like that kind of, maybe set him back a little bit in terms of the progress that he's made mentally and stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. And then bringing in Matthew Comegy from Texas Tech. You kind of glossed over Texas Tech at 9. I think.
Could have gone through everything and we could have had a 50-minute breakdown, but we got to save Walker.
Hey, people would probably love that. But that's the big question. Matthew Comegy's coming over. Didn't play at all last season. Had major wrist surgery. The wrist is, in my opinion, probably the second most important, body part as it relates to golf behind the back. So. It's tough to come back sometimes from that, and it's the exact same procedure that Jordan Spieth had. So, what are we going to get from him if he can be the player that he was for Tech before he got hurt? That's what I'm kind of banking on. So I think the potential for Texas is to be the best team in the country.
That's just a little intro into the fall previews, and again we will be locked and loaded moving forward, but let's pivot to what's front and center, and it's the 50th playing of the Walker Cup at Cypress Point. It happened here back in 1981 when the Americans won, led by Corey Pavin and Hal Sutton and Jay Sigel. A lot's changed. And then in some respects, nothing has changed, because you and I were out here in July for Media Day, and very fortunate that we got to play this golf course that exceeded every expectation known to man. You think about, this was part of the rota of the AT&T Pebble Beach from, I believe, 1947 to 1990. So you're going 35 years, unless I'm missing something, since anyone might have seen it on TV. And then in 81, I was luckily in second or third grade, so I couldn't tell you if the 81 Walker Cup had any television coverage. The point I'm making, this has the feeling of when we were at Seminole and places that you don't hear, you hear about, but you don't get to see. And we heard about the conversation of the USGA and Cypress Point. Would you be interested? We have one rule: nothing changes. Our course is good, or it's the end of the conversation. And I think by no means are we at the level of the 20 we're going to see. I think you and I playing it, you're like, oh no, it's good. And I think more people are going to be wowed, Brentley. R70 just over a whopping 6,600 yards, but you get courses like this and they play nothing like the yardage on a handful of holes, and look no further than 15 and 16 when you can arguably have about 150 yard difference on back-to-back par threes.
Yeah, and it's all wind dependent, right? And it's pretty crazy because I believe Garden City Club, which hosted one of the first Walker Cups, is the shortest course in length at just over 6,200. This is only about 400 yards longer than that. And to compare, LACC was north of 7,300 for all four sessions, I think, back in 2017. So, but you're right. It doesn't, when you get the cool weather, when you get the wind, I don't necessarily think, looking at the forecast, we're going to get anything crazy weather-wise in terms of wind or rain. But if the fog rolls in, like the ball doesn't travel as far, I think the design of the golf course, when you look at potentially, with 8 and 9 and 17, if they use the front tee, 18 is a very short par 4 as well, with some really short par 3s. Most of the par 4s, I feel like, there's still some meat on them. So it's just interesting. And, obviously with match play, it doesn't necessarily... it doesn't necessarily matter. Everyone's playing the same golf course. You're not really playing for a score. Par sort of irrelevant. So the fact that five, the fifth hole was playing as a par four, and I think there's one other hole on the back playing I think 10's playing as a par four, so that doesn't really matter. But yeah, it'll be interesting. They can kind of do whatever they want, I feel like, with the hole locations, because I mean, you played it. I mean, I'm sure there's some holes, whether it was the fifth green or the 18th green. If you're above the hole, and Dean Ooh. Robertson, the captain for the GB&I, was mentioned that at least 3 or 4 times. He said, you know, this is an approach, you know, a second shot golf course. The fairways are kind of generous, but you have to be below the hole. So that's something, you know, for the average viewer, if you're watching on television, you know, sometimes if you're not there, you can't really appreciate the slopes and stuff of the greens. But just know, like, if you're above the hole, the guys are going to have a really tough putt. It was fun getting out and walking with the team and having them put their little flags down and their little you know, coasters down and trying to hit these putts that you're barely even tapping. So it's going to be good. It's only two teams, right? Have GB&I teams have won on U.S. soil in the 49 previous Walker Cups. So
yeah,
the task is large.
21-2-1, both losses by the Americans to Great Britain and Ireland, both occurring in the state of Georgia. 1989 Peachtree, 01 Ocean Forest. I got to quickly circle back that you talk about 18, and I hope many of the matches get there. A, someone's going to try to drive the green. I'm not sure where they are going to end up, but someone at some point will do that. And when the hole location is anywhere in the front part of 18, and if someone is hole high or beyond, their next shot, assuming up there in two, they'll be playing their next from 40 yards the other way. Someone will putt it off the green, chip it off the green, and yeah, maybe I'm speaking from experience, maybe I'm not. And that's just one of the many that, as you said, you get out of position. You're going to see shots of a hole location back left, and someone might hit it 15 yards long and right because that's the best way to get it to the hole.
Yeah, there was a caddy today on, I believe it was 18, basically just said, you know, your only way of stopping it is to hit the hole. And he's absolutely right. So some of the, there was a certain player on the U.S. side that was trying to convince himself and some of his teammates that on those super fast putts, if somehow it's rolling over kind of the darker part of POA, it somehow stops it a little bit more. I'm not sure exactly how true that is, but hey, I mean, if it's true, then that's something else to watch. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think the stats are in Walker Cup history, like, it's in the high 80% of matches getting to at least the 16th hole. So we'll have plenty of these matches coming down to the wire. And in 81, and you talked about, was that on TV? There's a great ABC like clip of the broadcast, and I think Peter Alice is involved in what was on that, and the intro was great. I think it was like a Barry White song or something, and there's like a flyover, you know, going over 16, and it's kind of a cool thing to kind of look back. But fast forward to that, there's the moment of the clinching point, and it was Jim Holtgreave on the 16th hole. So if we could get a close Walker Cup that somehow ends on 16 or 17, and taking nothing away from the 18th hole, but I think that would be an iconic finish to have that. And which team's going to have that iconic finish? I've been making the prediction for a while that I think this is the year that GB&I gets gets a third one over here. I mean, you could ask me why. It's just kind of a gut feel.
Well, and I'll just to point counterpoint, you know, I'm going to pull the I'm on the call, so I'm not going to make a selection.
You're Herb Street.
But in my preparation, I mean, and it's no disrespect to GB&I, every time we get ready for this, the numbers clearly say, wow, how are they ever going to beat the Americans? The Americans have 7 of the top 10 in the world amateur golf ranking. GB&I, I believe, has 4 or 5 in the top 50. Yeah, you can go on and on. But I bring that up because when I went to Royal Aberdeen in 2011, on paper, there's no chance.
Two days later, you can't lay at number one.
Well, and I've always maintained, and just my opinion, that at the time, not what they became, at the time, that was the best U.S. Walker Cup team in history. And I've always said it, and I've never wavered from it, because you just said Cantlay, as an 18-year-old, shot 60 at Hartford in a PGA Tour event. You had not one, but two Georgia Bulldogs on that team, and Russell Henley and Harris English, that had won as amateurs on the Korn Ferry Tour. Yes, have there been other teams that have had more success 5, 10, 15 years down the road? But I'll be honest, I pitched the notion. We ended up creating an hour show, and we went over and we shot it. This is one of the greatest American teams ever, if not the best. It's going to be a coronation. And then 72 hours later, it didn't happen. Which almost added to the whole element of, wow. And I'll always remember it. Saturday, 45 degrees, blowing 30, rain coming from the ground. The Americans with four layers, GB and I, comes out in short sleeve shirts. And I looked at my producer. I said, they're in trouble. And they were.
Kelly Kraft did not have a good week that week. He went 0-4 as the reigning U.S. amateur champion.
So. Yeah, there were a few that...
Not to put it all on Kelly Kraft, but...
Hey, blame the U.S. captain, Nathan Smith, right? He should have found a way to get...
speaking of U.S. amateur champions, I was digging into some numbers. The last 10 reigning U.S. amateur champions at the time of the Walker Cups that they've played. So we're going back to 1999 and David Gossett, who won the USAM that year at Pebble Beach. Those USAM winners have gone 10, 18, and 6. And only Bryson, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Colt Knost have winning records. So it's not a good omen for Mason Howell, but hey, the kid's 18 years old. He's naive. He probably has no idea about that record, and why not him? He's not going to play all four sessions, so there's no chance that he goes 0-4 like Kelly Kraft. But I just thought that was an interesting nugget. And I also, on the flip side, and I asked Jackson Koivun about this today, but the world number ones, they've historically played all four sessions. So the teams lean on their best player, and for the most part, they've delivered. And recently, 2 years ago, Gordon Sargent, what did he go? 4-0. So Jackson Koivun definitely has the game. This is kind of a home game for him. He was born in San Jose. Didn't move to Chapel Hill, North Carolina until senior year of high school, something like that. So he's a West Coast guy. He grew up around POA. This is going to be a really fun match. The pairings are, I'm interested to see what the U.S. does with their foursomes pairings, because 9 of the 10 guys play Titleist golf ball, and they're kind of split in Pro V1X, Pro V1. Only Stu plays a TP5, and I think it's almost kind of a for sure thing that Stu sits at least one of the foursome sessions. He's done that in each of his previous four. But then on the flip side, with the GB and I team, they're going to run back, I believe, a lot of those pairings from the St. Andrews Trophy a few weeks ago, when they went when they won foursome 7.5 to 1/2, very similar format setup to the Walker Cup, where you do two foursome sessions, two single sessions, and a lot of those guys are back on this team. So that's something to watch for. Trying to think of other things that are in my notebook from today. All right, some interesting nuggets. Not a great start for the GB and I team. So they spent last Friday at Stanford. I was giving Conrad a hard time over text message about aiding and abetting the enemy by letting them practice on their great facility. But I guess on the way down to Cyprus after Stanford, they're about 30 minutes into their drive, the bus breaks down. And it's 2 hours on the side of a road, kind of in that mountainous stretch.
half that drive, right south of San Jose. You better lose it on 101 and not up there on 156 around some of those bends.
So as Luke Poulter was describing it to me, something popped. They kind of heard this explosion, and then they crept up this hill, and they barely made it to the top. They were able to pull over. But yeah, everything, I guess, pun intended, is uphill from last Friday. They rested on Tuesday. I thought that was interesting. Didn't play golf at all. Played a lot of FIFA. The U.S. team has played every single day. They played Pebble on Monday. But again, as we've gotten later in the week, like today, the guys played 1 through 3. A lot of them cut over to 12T, played in from there. Hegestad went off on his own, played 10 and 11, and then caught up with the guys again. GB and I believe, played all 18, so they've done a little bit more kind of full days. And then the only other thing I can think of, last night, Ian Poulter had dinner with the team. Obviously an amazing Ryder Cup player, super clutch, and was a part of that team at Medina that pulled off one of the great upsets, you know, great away upsets in sport, not even just golf, not even just the Ryder Cup. So I'm sure that whatever he told them, you know, GB and I is going to try to replicate some of that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. As you said, hopefully it's another memorable Walker Cup. Any parting thoughts on some Walker Cup memory that stands out to you through the handful of these that you've covered?
Well, there's a great story, and I won't tell it on here. I'll direct people to the Shotgun Start podcast. But there's a great story from back in 1981. One of the competitors for GB and I, Duncan Evans, did not have the greatest career afterwards. He spent a lot of time in jail, you know, a lot of financial fraud type instances. So that's not my favorite tale. I just thought that's kind of interesting with us being back at Cyprus. But yeah, I find myself every 2 years going back to that article that I wrote in 2021, where I kind of pulled out 10 of these tales that no one talks about. I tweeted out one of them a couple days ago, and people gave me crap for it, about how back at Pine Valley, you know, many decades ago, was kind of one of the things that influenced the 14 club rule. And there was a guy who played with like 7 9-irons and a couple left-handed clubs, had 34, 35 clubs in the bag. And that was kind of when Bobby Jones and, you know, people huddled the USGA and were like, right, what's a good number? They kind of took the average, you know, between Bobby Jones and I forget who the GB and I captain was at the time, but they kind of took the average of that and came up with 14 clubs. So that's interesting. You were at, you mentioned 2011. Was that Stiggy Hodgkin still?
Yeah, everyone remembers Stiggy.
Stig of the dump.
James Byrne was on that team. Tom Lewis, Andy
was James
Sullivan.
Byrne the tall one, the really tall one? Because he played with Stiggy, and well, that was a team. I don't, was Andy Sullivan and Stiggy on the same team? Because that was a.
Yeah, I think we saw Stiggy in two in a row. I want to say we saw him at Marion in 09 and then 11 at Aberdeen.
Yep, 5 foot four.
Yeah, no, Stiggy was a character. But, and that's to your point. Yeah. We've got 20 amazing golfers representing their countries and all that. You know, a lot of them, this will be the pinnacle of their golfing career. And that's not a slight. We just know everyone's going to try to play, and the numbers just will tell them at some point it's time to go do something else. And that's just data supporting the whole 20 of these guys aren't going to be playing on the PGA Tour in 5 years. And if they are, then I need to do something else. But you don't know.
Who's that going to be, Berko? I'll put you on the spot.
Oh, gosh.
I'm just kidding. You don't have
the percentages. Just
we'll just say Stuart Hegestad, because he's never going to play on the PGA Tour, and I think Stu's okay with that.
Yeah, well done. But it just, every time this comes around, whether it's St. Andrews or Aberdeen or Marion or Chicago Golf Club, the first one I was at in 05, man, they're good. Man, it's fun. Now, I don't want a one-sided affair that we've had. I think in 2013, Nathan clinched it when we were 27 minutes on the air, which is never a good thing. I do hope, because in recent runs here, it has been a chore for Great Britain and Ireland to truly be competitive late into a Sunday. Over there, go back 2 years ago. I mean, it took a monumental Sunday for the Americans to come back. So let's hope something good, something fun, something enjoyable.
Yeah, I would say, looking at the roster for GB and I, Tyler Weaver, he's ranked number 10 in the world. He's their top-ranked player, Wagger-wise. He's going to need to do what he did at the St. Andrews Trophy when he went 3-0-1. He's going to need to do what he did at NCAAs as a freshman 2 years ago, where he went 3-0 after not playing in stroke play. He's kind of their horse, and, you know, he knows it. You know, I think Dean knows it. The whole team knows it, and the American side know it. I mean, this isn't like the Walker Cups of yesteryear, where the GB and I team are, you know, a bunch of contractors and builders and 30-year-olds from, you know, England and Scotland. Like 11 or 9 of the 10 guys on the team play college golf or just graduated. You look at guys like Dominic Clemens, who played at Stetson in Alabama, and Charlie Forster, who just graduated from Long Beach State. So these guys aren't, you know, they're not gonna step onto the tee and be scared of a Jackson Koivin or a Tommy Morrison. So that's why I think they can handle it, but they're going to need Tyler Weaver to step up. They're going to need Niall Shields-Donegan to continue probably what I would argue is the best golf that he's played of his career, coming off of a spirited run to the semis at the U.S. Amateur. I've heard that tickets were hard to come by for most of Mill Valley Golf Course, so I don't know if we're going to get quite the atmosphere that we got at the Olympic Club, but...
Well, that will save you, right? Hazard pay.
Hey, you know what? Yeah. I'd gladly jump in that mosh pit again for the company. Yeah,
it was fun, and I'll leave with that. Maybe my favorite memory, because we've always covered it, was as a fan in 1993. My then college roommate Brian Gay was on the American team at Interlochen, and it was coming on ESPN. There's no internet. You got no idea what's going on. That's how old I am. And they come on, and the matches, every single American, 2 up, 3 up, 5 and 3. And there's Brian, either 4 or 5 down through like 11 or 12. And I'm like, are you kidding? I mean, I was so pumped to see one of my best friends do it. And you're like, huh. Well, then he wins 13, and he wins 14, and he wins 15, and he wins 16, and he wins 17, and he ties 18 to earn a half point against somebody who would become a 3-time major champion in Padraig Harrington.
In a multi-time champion store, major Correct. Champion as well.
But it was one of those you're watching, and the match itself is still the biggest margin of victory in Walker Cup history, a 14-point win by the Americans. So they actually started focusing on Brian, because I think all the other matches were pretty much closed out or that. And so I was just like, son of a gun, having no idea what Padraig Harrington would become soon thereafter.
Well, and that's the great thing. I mean, you touched on it earlier. I mean, that's the great thing for those lucky enough to attend, even those watching on TV. There's going to be a player that you're introduced to this week who goes on to have a great career. And then, as you said, the opposite's true as well. Do you remember who else played in 93 at Interlochen?
For the Americans, you've got...
I was thinking of someone on GB and I. It's very pertinent to this week.
Oh, well, Dean Robertson.
Dean Robertson.
Yeah.
He went 1-2. Yeah. And do you know why this 93 Walker Cup was also notable?
They had to alter the format in the middle of play because of weather.
So they had a lot of overnight rain.
Might have had to cancel a session.
The first foursome session. And then they played, because this was before they went to...
26. It used to be 24 points.
But they played 10 singles matches each day, at that time they were only doing 8 each day. So they added... two matches a day to get those points back, and so they were able to get kind of on the same number of points. That's why the score kind of looks similar to the other ones, but But yeah, I mean, kind of a Herculean effort to get things back on track. Because I, from what I've heard, I mean, I was only 3 years old at the time. I heard it, there was a lot of rain. And
there was a lot of rain, and it was Vinny Giles was your captain. You had Alan Doyle, Danny Yates, Justin Leonard, Tim Herron, Kelly Mitchum, David Bergogno,
John Harris. Wow, I mean, you just rattled them all. Todd Dempsey was the one you missed.
Wow, who says I wasn't going to get to Todd
Dempsey?
Oh,
and Siggle. You didn't say Siggle either, did you? Yeah.
No, Todd
the late
Dempsey,
Jay Siggle.
Yeah. Who, yeah, Dempsey had won NCAAs that year, I believe, in 93 individually. It was fun. That was my first memory. I hope we have a great memory this coming weekend at the Walker Cup. We're off.
Is this better than the Ryder Cup, you think? I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, apples and cantaloupes. It ain't even apples and oranges. But in terms of pure... Just, I just love when people are playing for something bigger than themselves. Maybe that's why I love college golf. But when these guys put on the red, white, and blue, and yeah, it's good. It really is good. It's up there. This is one of my 3 or 4 weeks a year, or every other year, that I'm like, can't wait. And then when you get Cyprus, you really can't wait.
Yeah, agreed. Especially if you're flying in 2C out here.
Yeah. You tell your little mole in the back to get some more status and he doesn't have to sit in, you know, 26G. That's enough for today. College Golf Talk is back. We're off and running for this upcoming college season. But first and foremost, front and center, the Walker Cup. We will be back next week to break that all down. Folds of Honor is going to go on early next week. We'll have plenty on our plate. But at least for now, this new start to the new semester, the new season of the new year. For Brentley, I'm Burko. Thanks, as always, for watching and listening. We'll see you next week.